Hi everyone, welcome to the Better Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Omar Akhtar. In this podcast, I talk with various experts to find better ways of addressing chronic disease. I hope you find this content beneficial. Today, I'm speaking with Dr. Courtney Clark about soft tissue and contractile injuries. Courtney and I did an episode a while ago on low back pain, and given how well it was received and the great feedback we got, we decided to do one on tendon dysfunction. There are two types of tendon dysfunction, tendinitis and tendinopathy. Recovery from these are not always straightforward. Generally, people tend to do too much too soon after doing too little for too long. That results in delayed healing time and continued inflammation. The inflammatory phase in a tissue injury is typically 10 days, and during that time, we can take some steps to improve our recovery. The acronym RICE, which stands for rest, ice, compression, and elevation, is no longer applicable, and instead, a new acronym called peace and love is being applied with greater results. We discuss all that and more today. Now, let's head over to the episode. Hi, everyone. I'm extremely excited to be talking today with Dr. Courtney Clark. Dr. Clark was on the episode number 2, where we were talking about low back pain, and that was a very good episode, and I got great feedback from that episode. And so we decided to do another episode, and we're going to be talking about soft tissue injuries and contractile injuries today. And I think it's a topic that Dr. Clark is very familiar with and has expertise on. And so I'm really excited to be talking with her today. Just to give a quick background on her, Dr. Courtney Clark has a doctorate in physical therapy, and she's a board-certified orthopedic clinical specialist. She's also the clinic director of East Riverside Results PT. She has a great passion for orthopedic care and an in-depth knowledge of the science of pain and pain management. She uses an individualized approach to each patient, and she lives in South Austin and enjoys a variety of outdoor activities. So, Courtney, thank you so much for joining me again, talking about another very important topic.
Yeah, thank you again for having me.
Absolutely. So we are talking about now injuries. And so I wanted to start off with talking about these soft tissue injuries, where you see them occur most often in terms of parts of the body, and we can start from there.
All right. So I think the most common areas we see in the clinic are usually the Achilles tendon, patellar tendon, plantar fascia, and the rotator cuff. Sometimes we'll see it in the wrist extensors, otherwise known as tennis elbow, and other times we'll see it in the gluteal tendons, where they connect out on the side of the hip, and they get diagnosed with bursitis or something like that. So those are the kind of most common areas we see it, but it can occur in any contractile tissue in the body, so it can be anywhere.
Okay. And what is the population you're seeing this most occur in? Is it mostly athletes, or is there different groups that have this? Is there a general sort of pattern that this follows older folks or younger folks?
Yeah, again, pretty wide variance. You see it in athletes with repetitive use injuries more so. In the general population, maybe the less athletic population, we see it a whole lot more. When people do too much too soon after doing too little for too long. So maybe they've had a very sedentary life. Maybe they've put on 20 pounds and they start realizing they need to become more active, and they start a new walking program, and they go from 0 to 100 in the first couple weeks, and their tissue gets inflamed and doesn't like that very much. So that's where we see it the most often. And when it really becomes problematic is when that becomes more of a chronic issue, and it is no longer an acute issue. It goes into more of a chronic phase where you actually start having tissue changes microscopically. You get changes in the way it looks. So that's where the rehab gets a lot harder to manage. But there's a wide spectrum of patients that deal with this. And usually it's the folks that just start doing too much too quickly.
Yeah. So I want to understand what happens at, you just mentioned like the tissue level, and what happens from a physiologic or pathophysiologic level. So you talk about two different types of tendon dysfunction. So can you talk a little bit about what those two different types are and explain it a little bit for the layperson?
Sure. So you have tendonitis that kind of falls into the acute phase of injury. So say you start walking, 3 miles a day and you haven't been walking and you do that for a week or so. And then all of a sudden your ankle Achilles is really bugging you, or your plantar fascia on the bottom of your foot, the arch of your foot, is really bugging you. That would be considered a tendonitis because it's an acute inflammatory process. And so our body is realizing that the tissue is irritable. It's sending all the right chemicals to the site to try and manage the inflammation. And then the second type is tendinopathy, and that's where we have more of a chronicity factor. So those are the folks that, had this happen acutely, but maybe didn't stop what they were doing and they just kept pushing through it and not managing the injury like they should have through the correct strategies, which we'll get into later. They're not backing off. They're continuing to walk 3 miles a day. And so you actually start to see deformation of the linear tissue. Our muscles and tendons have more of a linear tissue matrix, kind of like if you think about like a pack of spaghetti, where all the spaghetti is laying nice and flat and in a line. What you actually see under a microscope when they do histology studies on tendinopathy is the tissue is disorganized. It's more like a ball of, like a knotted ball of yarn. And so that tissue is dysfunctional at that point on a cellular level, and we have to start trying to get it remodeled into a linear fashion so it can work the way it's supposed to work, which is to elongate and shorten.
Mm-hmm. So the itis, for people, that is referring to inflammation, and the pathy at the end of tendinopathy is referring to more muscle dysfunction breakdown, perhaps, that you can see histologically.
Muscle tendon correct. Histology changes, correct. It's right. More of that chronic phase.
So is the way to differentiate between the two types of tendon dysfunction, is there a way you can do that clinically without, or is it just a time frame type of thing, acute versus chronic?
Yeah, it's a lot more acute versus chronic. Duration of symptoms has a lot to do with it. Sometimes in a tendon that's more superficial, we can palpate the tendon itself, like the Achilles is a good example. If you're running your fingers down the Achilles and you feel a knot there, that's probably a tendinopathy where they have deformed tissue and actual, visible and palpable change in the structure of the tendon where it has healed back in a knotted kind of dysfunctional manner. And sometimes, there are times when therapy alone is not enough and they have to do different things, such as PRP or other interventions that we can talk about later too.
Okay. So, and when you talk about chronicity, is there a time frame that you consider a good cutoff for acute versus chronic? Is that a couple of months or a few weeks?
You're usually looking at less than 3 months to be considered acute. And more than 3 months, okay. Especially more than 6 months, you're definitely getting more into that chronic range at that point. And when you know the pain becomes more constant rather than intermittent, that's usually moving in the wrong direction.
Right. It's good that you mentioned about the palpable things that you can actually feel when you talk about tendinopathy as opposed to tendonitis, because I was just imagining not a lot of histological diagnosis goes into this because, I don't see a lot of patients going through possibly a biopsy or anything like that for this. It's more of a theoretical type of thing, but in terms of getting the diagnosis, so the most important thing you're saying is the time frame. So less than 3 months versus more than 3 months. And what other changes that occur with tendinopathy that you might see, i.e. Palpable changes and things like that.
Yes, and usually with any tendinopathy, tendonitis as well, it's going to hurt when the muscle is in its end range of a stretch, and then it's going to hurt when it's being contracted as well. So that's kind of one of the differentiating factors as well between contractile versus non-contractile tissue. For us when we look at differential diagnostics.
Okay, and when you're thinking of tendinitis and tendinopathy, is there a difference between where it's occurring in the body that would change anything in your thought process about diagnosis or management, or is it more or less the same, it's just the same mechanism occurring in a different muscle?
It's pretty much the same mechanism, just occurring in different areas of the body. There are cases where there may be a bursitis involved, such as like the greater trochanter. We have a bursa sac that sits right there to protect the tendon from frictioning across the bone. So there are certain areas in the body that you can have a bursitis in conjunction with tendonitis. And so, you know, if you have a bursitis, you may do really well with a steroid injection. If you have just a tendonitis alone, then we don't necessarily want those folks going and getting steroids, because long-term steroid use over time is actually going to weaken that tissue further. So kind of differentiating between bursitis and contractile tissue dysfunction is important, so we aren't providing the wrong interventions that might actually harm someone.
Absolutely. Yeah. So you're talking about interventions here. So I want to go into that and just ask that when patients do have these injuries, contractile tissue injuries, soft tissue injuries, what are their options out there in terms of who they can go and see and the modalities available for them to heal?
Yeah. So initially, first 10 days, you really just kind of need to take it easy. I wouldn't say immobilize it. Like, don't put a splint or a cast on it unless it's severely painful. Try to continue moving it. If you need to use crutches or something like that, depending on where it is in the body, then do so. But the first 10 days, you more or less want to let the inflammatory process do its thing. You don't want to knock out the inflammation completely, because we now know that NSAIDs and ice and medications like NSAIDs start to kind of inhibit healing or slow the healing process down, because it's getting rid of the inflammation, which is more or less the signal that our body needs to be able to send the right chemicals to that tissue to begin the healing process. So that's probably the most common question we get from people is like, well, I've been taking ibuprofen and icing it and wearing a brace. And it's like, well, those are all things that we should start trying to avoid because the newer research really shows we need to move it within a certain, limited range, keep it moving, keep blood flow happening, allow it to be a little bit inflamed. That's okay. And then after that 10-day window, start, you could use maybe like Tylenol or something that doesn't work the same way pharmacologically. It works a different way than an NSAID medication. So it's not knocking out the inflammatory process. It's just blocking the substance P or the pain signal, more or less. And then as far as modalities, you can always do all of the soft tissue work, the massage. You can do things like acupuncture. You can do kinesio tape, all of that stuff. But the meat and potatoes of the rehab is the loading process and starting to find what we consider an optimal load and starting to slowly progress that over time. And usually remodeling takes like 8 to 12 weeks for that tissue to start remodeling more linearly as we progress the load. And so really monitoring a person's symptoms at that point, how high is your pain level? Is it over a 4? Is it staying intermittent or is it more constant? And that's kind of how we start modifying the program based on their symptomatic response to the loading that we're doing. Okay. And so they can see, as far as other professionals, they can see, they can do massage therapy, they can do acupuncture, they can see, some personal trainers may have some knowledge on this, but I would always be a big proponent of getting in to see a physical therapist and letting them assess you and help guide you through that progressive loading, graded exposure sort of program that you have to do to get better.
Yeah, maybe sports physicians as well.
Sports physicians,
specifically on that, they can do maybe some the steroid injections or whatever needs to be
needed.
Done if it's not if needed,
if needed,
nice. So this came up recently because I myself a couple of weeks ago had an injury. It was a soccer related injury, so sports related injury, and I basically had it was a contact injury, and that my the back of my right leg got pretty inflamed very quickly with severe ankle swelling, inability to walk, severe pain, and then bruising along the back of the ankle. So quintessentially a significant soft tissue injury there. And you know, for me, it was always that rice was in my mind. You know, for people that don't know, it's rest, ice, compression and elevation, right? That's what you're told, especially coming out of medical school and these places, that that's the best way to approach injuries, at least the most simplest way. And so I couldn't help myself but basically ice it and, you know, reach for either Tylenol or an NSAID, just because of the significance of the swelling and the pain. And then afterwards, I remember speaking with you, and you had mentioned that the rice, that whole thing is quite outdated, and it's peace and love is the new acronym. So if you could shed light on peace and love and what that means, because it was news to me. I didn't know that we're no longer using rice. I was very much with that mindset. And so now the new acronym is peace and love.
Yeah, we went through sort of a change in the way we process things. Rice came out in probably 1978 by Dr. Gabe Merkin. And so we stuck with that probably until the late 90s. And then the new acronym after that was PRICE. We stuck with that for a few more years. And then in 2012, it switched to POLICE. And then I think after that, they retracted the RICE statement altogether. And then now peace and love. So it's a little bit more pleasant to hear peace and love. Right. What it stands for. Yeah, then POLICE or something like that. Mm-hmm. But P stands for protection. So in the early phases, the first few days, we want to try and protect it. You don't want to go out there and do exactly what you did to hurt it again. Protect it in the ways that you need to, whether it be crutches. If you really feel like you need to wear a splint, you can wear a splint, but don't wear it around the clock. Take it off, move it some. The next letter is E, stands for elevation. So that's still a good thing, elevating it some throughout the day to kind of minimize some of the swelling, especially if you are having any sort of numbness or tingling, because that can happen sometimes when you have extensive swelling. So, you know, elevate it in that case to protect your nerves. The A stands for avoiding anti-inflammatories. So we kind of talked about that earlier, avoiding the NSAIDs, avoiding the ice if you can. Try to let your body do the inflammation process and let it go through that first 10 days to try and get everything in there starting to heal. The C stands for compression. So that didn't go anywhere. That one's been around for a long time. Wear some kind of, you know, elastic bandage or some sort of sleeve to reduce any excessive swelling that's existing. The E stands for education. So this is arguably maybe the most important part of all of this with our patients, is spending the time to tell them that this is normal. You know, constant pain or so for the first 10 days is normal because your body's in the inflammatory phase. It's reacting to the injury. It's doing what it's supposed to do. Allow it to do what it needs to do. And then educating them about, hey, don't wear brace around the clock. Don't ice. Don't use NSAIDs. Don't overload it again just yet. And then educating them about when they start their loading program, what that should look like. And then you go into the love part. So the L is load. And what that would basically means that we want to start gradually loading that tissue again. And there's a variety of ways that we can do that. A bunch of different types of contractions of the muscles. We can talk about that later. The O stands for optimism. So being confident and positive about your injury is always a good thing. There's never, our positive patients are always the ones that do the best. The ones that are kind of, you know, real sad and negative Nancy's, and they're upset about what happened and really regretful and all that, they tend to struggle a little bit more. Mm-hmm. So just recognize.
Yeah, that's actually a very interesting point. If I could just add to that, because I just recently did an episode on pain specifically, and we were talking about the pain pathways and how your belief around your own pain will affect those pathways and will, you know, continue those pathways, or you can actually improve those pathways by just positive thoughts and positive, really reprocessing therapy. Pain reprocessing therapy was what we were talking about. And so it's very good that you mentioned that, because that does have an effect on your recovery and pain.
Has a huge effect on your overall health and well-being. No matter where your pain is, being positive and having a positive outlook, positive mindset, And really, you could view it kind of as cognitive behavioral therapy, right? Kind of retraining your brain to not take those negative pathways, but focus on what you need to do to get better and know that you have control over the situation. When you lose that control, then things start getting a little haywire. So the next letter is V, vascularization. So it's very important that during this injury phase, we're encouraging people to do aerobic exercise. And obviously in therapy, we try to minimize the amount of stress we're putting on the actual tissue that's injured, and we can do aerobics with the upper body. Or if it's an upper body injury, we can do aerobics for the lower body. That increases your heart rate, pumps more blood, more oxygen throughout your whole body and your tissues. And that really helps to calm things down. It helps pump things out and move things around like it needs to happen. And then there's been some recent research in the past few years that just talks about using aerobic exercise for pain relief as well, because it washes all those endorphins around in our brain and makes us feel better. So that kind of ties into the optimism part of this too. And then lastly, the exercise, which is the important part. So restoring your range of motion and starting that graded progressive exercise program to load that tissue exactly in the right ways at the right time to start getting better.
Great. Well, yeah, thank you for explaining that acronym. The new acronym is Peace and Love, and I'll include that in the show notes. And I want to just focus a little bit about what exactly you do. And you mentioned the different types of contraction. And so can you elaborate a little bit on that and what folks that will come in with these injuries, specifically working with you and your colleagues, what are the exact things that they will be doing?
So say they come in with, let's say, a rotator cuff tendonitis or even a tendinopathy. Initially, we typically start someone on what's called an isometric contraction. So an example of an isometric contraction would be something like a wall sit or a plank. That may not be the exact exercise we start them on. Obviously, if it's their shoulder, we're probably going to have them do some isometric external rotation, isometric internal rotation, isometric abduction. We typically start them on what we call a submaximal contraction. So instead of pushing 100% of your force, maybe 50%, maybe 60%. And what you want when we start these loading programs is to produce pain up to a 4 out of 10, but we don't really want it going above a 4 or 5. If you start going above that, then you're probably overloading the tissue and going to send it into an inflammatory state again. So we educate that up to a 4 is good. We want to sustain those isometric contractions for longer periods of time. There was literature that came out several years ago that talked about the longer sustained contractions at a submaximal effort seem to help pain a lot, reduction of pain specifically within tendons. So that's where we start them and kind of see how they're going to tolerate that. You can modify the angles of the isometric so that you're doing an isometric contraction where you're not moving during the contraction, but then you start altering the angle of the initial start position. And then from there, we usually move into eccentrics, which is an example of that would be, say, in a squat, the lowering portion of the squat would be the eccentric portion of that movement. And then the concentric portion would be the push back up. So eccentric essentially means elongating the muscle while loading it. Concentric means shortening the muscle while loading it. Out of all three of the contraction styles, concentric contraction tends to be the most aggressive on the muscle tissue. So we kind of put that towards the end of the rehab or start moving into that later in the rehab process, so it's not as irritating to the tissue. The isometrics and the eccentrics are where we start. And then obviously based on the person's symptomatic response, we either increase the load, increase the range, increase the hold times, increase the reps, and kind of play with all the variables that we can within an exercise selection, dosage. That's what we consider dosage in physical therapy, reps and sets and frequency. And the range of motion that you're going through is where we dose the exercise appropriately.
Right. So you're basically loading the muscle to a degree that it can get stronger, but not pushing it over the edge where it gets worse and more inflamed.
Correct. Yep.
Very good. And you also mentioned earlier a little bit about PRP. So, you know, I want to just harp on that a little bit, where patients who may not improve and they go toward that tendinopathy and the chronic phase, and it's much harder for them to recover. There are certain other modalities such as PRP, which is platelet-rich plasma injections. Are you able to speak a little bit on that, what that is for and what that's doing different from what you're doing?
Yeah, somewhat. So that's a little bit outside of what PTs do, but we do sort of recognize when to refer someone to a specialist that can do those things. We see PRP a lot, and there's another treatment called ESWT. It's electroshockwave therapy. We see those being used a lot for like Achilles tendon issues or plantar fasciitis issues, where the tissue is relatively superficial and they can get to it relatively easy and cause a mechanical deformation of the dysfunctional tissue. And so more or less, they're introducing a mechanical disruption to the dysfunctional tissue to try and then get it prepared to be elongated and put back in kind of that linear matrix that we talked about earlier. And so those types of interventions, PRP, ESWT, things like that, more or less put the tissue back into an acute phase, because there's an inflammatory process that occurs after that happens. And then that's a great time to start your therapy, because then it kind of gives you a catalyst for healing while all the chemicals are doing what they're designed to do to kind of help the tissue.
Yeah, I think it's very important for patients to know that if they are in that chronic phase, then there are options out there for them that they can try to use to heal their pain and their injury. So it's good to know. And I don't mean to put you on the spot, but I want to ask you if you have any cases you can tell us that in which you've used this exact modality that you're talking about, and some success cases that people can say, okay, this is how the patient came in and this is how the physical therapy modality helped them.
Yeah, so I had a patient probably last year at some point that had a pretty thick Achilles tendinopathy. And so it was palpable. There was a knot deformation that was visible. We started therapy. We did maybe 4 weeks of the loading strategies that we're talking about here. Just wasn't really progressing. Every time we tried to progress, it kind of set her back. And so ultimately I ended up sending her to a physician that I trust a lot to do these and look at these people. And he ended up doing a Topaz procedure, which is a little bit more invasive. That's kind of a step above the PRP or ESWT. It's a little bit more, they have to go in surgically and cause the tissue disruption with their instruments. Rather than doing a whole repair, they just kind of reform the tissue, get it in an inflammatory state more or less, and then send her back to therapy. And then from there on, we were able to progress and she recovered fully. Typically rehab for this is going to take like an 8 to 12 week period of really slow progressive loading. And by the end of it, she was able to walk, you know, 2-3 miles a day again for exercise with no pain. So she was thrilled because we were able to get her back to what she wanted to do to lose weight, which is how the injury started to begin with, was starting a new walking program and went too fast, too much too soon. Yep. And then ended up in that spot.
Yeah, I think it's important for patients to hear those cases so that they can relate to how in a practical setting this type of therapy can benefit them.
Yeah, and I think it's something most of the questions we get, I think probably the number one question we get the first day of a visit is, how long is this going to take? And in most cases, 8 to 12 weeks of continual loading and progressing. But, you know, people also need to recognize if they have other health conditions, that's going to play a role in their healing times. If they're diabetic or they have hypothyroidism or just any other real comorbidities, even psychiatric issues, going to slow your healing down a little bit. So touching base with your therapist at least once a week so we can continue progressing you is very important. And it's important that it's done over that longer period of time, because that's what the research shows is needed for healing.
Yeah, these things certainly take some time. It's not a quick fix.
So. Not at all.
Yeah. So are there any other takeaways that you want to leave the audience with today?
Yeah, I think the biggest part is to avoid the disuse. Don't avoid using it just because it hurts. Know that some pain is okay. Less than a 4 is fine. You want to try and let the inflammation, your body, let it do what it's designed to do, and let it kind of handle it. And then go see a qualified medical professional that can help you get better the right ways, instead of letting it drag out into a chronic issue where you have tissue change and it becomes a lot harder and a lot more difficult to treat.
It's very important advice, so thank you for that.
Of course.
And thank you, Courtney, for having this very fascinating discussion. I think it's been very informative for myself and I think whoever's listening. So I appreciate your time in discussing it with me today.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me.
If you liked this episode, please share with your friends and family, and please remember to subscribe so we can share this message with as many people as possible.